Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's an Ask Me Anything, and all but one of the phone lines already full. So just think of how much fun we are about to have. The number is 888-318-7884 if you want to get on that last line. Ask Me Anything means you can ask Joe anything. You want to know about Jesus? You want to know about the saints? You want to know about the Bible, the early church, the later church, whatever. You want to know about the moral life? If you've got a question about the Catholic faith, we would love to talk to you. Whether you are Catholic or not, we would love to talk with you. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, author of a whole bunch of books, including The Eucharist is Really Jesus and Pope Peter and The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. And he's the guy behind one of the most popular Catholic podcasts now. It's getting to that point where I can now say one of the most popular Catholic podcasts. And I have data to back this up. I have actual data to back this up. I'm not going to reveal it right now, but I do have the data. And that would be Shameless Popery. Joe, a shameless papist, welcome.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You're very conspicuously drinking out of a mug as if you want me to read the mug and see what's on it. But I don't.
Well, it just says Shameless Popery.
Oh, it's the Shameless Popery mug. Oh,
lifting of the mug. You were mentioning the.
Yeah. All right. I missed that part. All right. You can get your Shameless Popery mug at shamelessjoe.com. You can also just listen to one of the most popular Catholic podcasts, Shameless Popery. It will never ever be as popular as anything Father Mike Schmitz does, but neither will any other Catholic podcast. So let's just say we're never going to get to say the most popular Catholic podcast, but one of
Bolton Sheen was just, he is, if anyone's looking out from heaven saying, man, I'd like one more shot, I bet he would have loved the YouTube era. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh,
Father
yeah.
Mike Schmitz, you're secure in number one.
He would have.
That's because Fulton Sheen's in heaven right now.
I don't think that Father Mike Schmitz could beat Fulton Sheen because the cape. Fulton Sheen had a cape,
yeah.
And I just don't think I love Father Mike Schmitz. I just don't think
there are rumors always that you don't.
I know. There's some kind of
these rumors up, which they're not.
I wish you wouldn't say it because I don't want because people will act like.
All I'm saying is this controversy can only be good for ratings.
For whose ratings?
Well, not his.
Oh, okay. If it's good for us. If there's like a fight. Okay.
If he has to respond to you, then people will be like, oh, that's like Kellett. Who's he?
Can you imagine?
Like 25-year-old girls are going to start listening to the show.
Okay.
I shouldn't say girls. Young women.
Young women, yeah. But the thing about Father Mike Schmitz is everybody in Catholic Twitter hates everybody else in Catholic Twitter. I don't know how that is. But nobody hates Father Mike Schmitz.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, how did he pull that off?
He managed to rise above the fray.
I know.
It feels like the entire internet age is designed to trap you by saying, take a side in this highly contentious dispute.
Right, yeah.
On, like, every week there's something where it's like, you've got to have the appropriate amount of outcry about this issue, and if you have too little, or if you're quiet, or if you have too much, people are going to get really upset, and you got to take just the right side. So, good luck. And Father Mike Schmitz somehow parts the sea in front of him and just trods through and no one gets mad at him.
That's why I have to say that's why I quit Facebook and Twitter completely because
of Father Mike Schmitz.
No, not because of Father Mike Schmitz. Stop saying that.
It sounded like
that's not where I was going because I don't have the fortitude, the maturity to rise above. I don't have that. And so
yeah.
I'm not the guy that I it's not going to help anybody if I'm on Twitter because I'm going to say something that's just alienating and mean probably. I wish I was a better person. Not, so I'm not on Twitter.
Fair enough. So instead you have a very large radio pulpit instead that you can share your meanness.
Well, you know what? I'm going to respond to that.
But at least you target it.
I'm going to respond to that little that little point you just made with genuine with seriousness, and I mean this.
Okay.
One of the great things about working at Catholic Answers is people hold you responsible for what you say. And
it's
I think that's one of the things that's missing in a lot of Catholic podcasting is people to say, hey, why are you talking that way? Why are you alienating this group?
Right.
Why are you being mean to this person? And it's very helpful to work with like people like Tim Staples, who, you know, he will tell you. Tim will tell you.
True.
Or Chris Check, who will say.
And it's good. There really is an iron sharpening iron, both in front of and behind the scenes.
I could not be one of these Matt Frads of the world, because I wouldn't behave as well as Matt Frad behaves. I need other people to go, dude, contain it. Why are you being a weirdo? And maybe he does too, you know, maybe it's his wife or other people, I don't know, but I admire it when I see it. I don't have it. All right, 888-318-7884 is the number. We start with Nathan, not the prophet. Well, maybe he is a prophet. I don't know. Nathan in Indiana, listening online. Nathan, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
Nathan.
Sure can.
That man is you. What? Nobody got that? That's what Nathan said today.
I got it. Okay. It's from the Bible.
Okay. I just did a Bible quote to try to get Nathan to talk. Go ahead, Nathan.
Okay, so I don't have the Bible open in front of me, so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase. But
okay.
In Jesus' passion, when he's in front of the court, right, they're trying to get all these crimes to stick to him, and nothing works. Until Jesus, he quotes the book of Daniel, the part where it says, you know, you'll see the Son of Man coming down in glory among the clouds. And then the chief priest tears his robes and says something like, what need do we have of witnesses? You heard the blasphemy yourself. And I'd always been taught that that was the moment where Jesus claims to be God, and that was the blasphemy that the chief priest was talking about. But I recently heard a Jewish person talking about the Gospels, and they said that it's not considered blasphemy to claim to be the Messiah, because somebody has to eventually be the Messiah.
Right.
And that there were also many people, including in Jesus' time, who also claimed to be the Messiah, and none of them were executed for blasphemy. And they said that doesn't make sense, that story doesn't make sense as far as he's concerned from like a Jewish standpoint. So I want to know if there's any more information you have on that.
I'd be happy to clarify that. That is a very good distinction. The mere claim to be the Messiah is not of itself blasphemous. I mean, the claim is either true or false. But Messiah just means the anointed one. And there was a promise of an anointed one. And in the Jewish sense, there were three offices that were anointed: priest, prophet, and king. And so there was this foretelling of one who was seemingly going to be priest, prophet, and king to lead the people, to deliver them. Jesus is that. Jesus is the Christ. But when he comes, he claims to be more than just the priest, prophet, and king. He also claims to be the Son of God and the Ancient of Days described in Daniel 7, the one like a Son of Man. So in John chapter 5, we're told that the reason his Jewish opponents wanted to kill him was not only because he broke the Sabbath, but also because he called God his Father, making himself equal with God. That's John 5:18. Now, he didn't literally break the Sabbath, but he was perceived as violating, you know, the law, when he was really just violating non-binding Pharisaic traditions. And then, as you said, he presents himself as the figure in Daniel 7, the one who comes like the Son of Man and is presented before the Ancient of Days and is given dominion and glory and kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. And so even that description of one like a Son of Man is really mysterious. This is like someone who appears human, but it's not clear from Daniel 7 by itself kind of what to make of it. But this is clearly more than just saying Son of Man. So the phrase Son of Man by itself, it just means man. The son of X is the same kind of thing X is. Like the child of a dog is a dog. The child of a man is a man. And so this is both on the one hand, why Son of Man by itself doesn't appear to be that provocative of a title, except when Jesus at his trial clearly connects it to this image in Daniel 7, where it appears to be saying something much more than just a man. But also, the son of formulation is why Jesus saying he's Son of God is so shocking, because it is a divine claim, and that does sound blasphemous if you don't have any kind of framework for that.
Does that make sense to you?
Does Jesus, I don't have it open for me. Does Jesus say he's the Son of God there, or does he quote that he's the Son of Man in that part?
Son of Man there, but specifically in connection to Daniel 7.
What about, add a question to Nathan's? He asks him, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus says, I am. Is the fact that he uses the construction I am significant?
It certainly seems to be. And you see that more obviously in the Gospel of John, where Jesus is using I am in a way that seems very clearly to be presenting himself as the same God who spoke to Moses in the burning bush. So when he says things like, before Abraham was, I am, that is just, you can't really escape the fact that he's making a divine claim there.
Right.
Some of the other uses the scholars are going to dispute. Does he mean to be just affirming something, or is he making a divine claim? But, you know, especially, like I say, in the Gospel of John, it's often very clear.
Nathan, I'm going to say thanks and leave it there. We got to take our first break. Before I take the break, I want you, if you're on YouTube, we'll put a poll question up, because our good friend Zach is leaving our employ here at Catholic Answers to take another job at another beautiful Catholic apostolate. And the poll question today over on YouTube, if you're there, is should Zach come into the studio for an on-air goodbye conversation with Joe and Cy? We want him to come in. I don't think he wants to come in, but we'll go by your vote. Do you want Zach to come in or not? Should Zach come into the studio for an on-air goodbye conversation with Joe and Cy? That's the poll question right now on our YouTube page. Right back with more with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Another great podcast on EWTN Podcast Central is The Messy Family Project. Mike and Alicia Hernan believe that being a good parent starts with being a great spouse. But it's hard, messy work, and we're not meant to do it alone. So join them on this journey. You can hear this and other faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates around the world at EWTN Podcast Central. Visit EWTN.com/radio and click on Podcast Central today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. 88 people already took the poll. I think that was like 33 seconds or something. 88 people took the poll. And then Zach was like, should I come in? I'm like, let's give people a minute to take the poll, Zach. I think Zach is anxious to come in now. Should Zach come into the studio for an on-air goodbye conversation with me and Joe? That's the poll question right now on our YouTube page. Just go to today's show. It'll be there under today's show. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. It's an Ask Me Anything. Allegra is in Flagstaff, Arizona, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Allegra, you ever been to the Grand Canyon?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. I was asking if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon.
Oh,
I think she's saying she's
it's
there.
It's only about a 75-minute drive.
That's
so
what I thought.
We visited many times.
Oh, all right. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Okay, so I have a Protestant friend who's open to discussing theological differences with me. So we go back and forth a lot. So the last place we kind of left off that I just want Joe's input on I think she just has a problem with authority. She'll even admit that the Catholic Church was the original church. She admits that, but she says that God knew that we were fallen, that the church was made up of fallible men, and so that's why there's mass conversions now, like outside of the Catholic Church, because God will find people and lead them to him, kind of how he sees fit. And she thinks the Bible is easily understood, and you don't have to overcomplicate it, you know, basically sola scriptura. And if you have to overcomplicate with theology, then it's not correct. But basically, she is the arbiter of truth, because she'll just go to whichever church she believes is proclaiming the word of God the most correctly, I guess you could call it. So I'm trying to go to all the Catholic Answers articles, and I've read a lot of it, but I'm kind of at a standstill here.
Yeah, I think there's a couple ways you could go with her. One might be to just press her kind of gently on, okay, you've gone to a bunch of different churches, and you've heard a lot of different people preaching different things, and yet you still think this is easy. Like, if I said, hey, this word problem is really easy, and then I gave it to 10 people who their job was answering word problems, and they gave me 10 different answers, I would come away from that being like, well, maybe it's not as easy as I thought it was. Like, maybe I was being a little naive about how easy it was. And so if you've got not just ordinary Christians, but priests and preachers and pastors giving opposite contradictory answers on things, it seems like maybe it's a little harder than a kind of superficial read would lead you to think. And then I think you can support that even biblically. So in 2 Peter chapter 3, in verse 15, Saint Peter appeals to our beloved brother Paul. And then he warns about Paul's letters. This is 2 Peter 3:16 now, that there are some things in them hard to understand. So anyone who says this is all easy is telling you they don't understand the Bible, because the Bible says it's not all easy. So there are some things in Paul's letters hard to understand, which he then adds, which the ignorant and unstable twist to their own destruction, as they do the other scriptures. So if you approach the Bible naively, assuming you got it under control because you're ignorant or unstable, that's really bad. And so anyone who says this is all really easy, that should be a big red flag. So I would actually press her on that before getting into the authority thing, just to instill a little bit of the seriousness of the matter, because it seems like she's treating it a little bit superficially, frankly. Second, in terms of the need for authority, I would be really tempted to go and look at the book of Judges with her, because in Judges, we're twice told that because there was no king in those days, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And your friend might think, hey, that sounds great. But it is absolutely dystopian. And Judges shows this descent into moral anarchy and horrors and unspeakable crimes, including unspeakable crimes being done by the Israelites, by, in one case, a Levite. And like just horrible assaults against women, murderous violence, like everything you could think of by people who were convinced they were the good guys. And we're told, like, this is bad, and this is one of the reasons why we need leadership. Because when everyone is doing what's right in their own eyes, they don't do the right thing. And every Christian should know this. This is why we don't believe in moral relativism. But the idea that we can be relativists by just interpreting the Bible our own way and expecting that we're going to get a better outcome is folly. And then just to add one more thing to it. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17 tells us, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they're keeping watch over your souls as men who will have to give account. Let them do this joyfully and not sadly, for that would be of no advantage to you. So you know, as a Christian layperson, that you have a duty to obey your leaders and to submit to them. And that's not something we want to do. Like, all of us want to be shepherds rather than sheep, but the vast majority of us are called to be sheep rather than shepherds. And it is spiritually unhealthy for us to conflate those roles, for those who are called to lead to refuse to lead, but for also for those who are called to follow to refuse to follow. And so that kind of spiritual crisis of authority, which we see in the family, which we see in every kind of segment of society, is not of God. It is very clearly and very explicitly not of God. And, you know, actually, I said that was going to be the last verse. I want to add one more, if I may. You know, your friend is right. Jesus foresaw every bit of corruption that would happen in his church, just as he knew every bit of corruption that would happen in Israel, and there's plenty. And what does he say? Well, in John 17, he explicitly prays for future disciples. He says to the disciples, he says of the disciples, that he's not praying only for them, but for those who will come to believe through their witness. And his prayer for us, this is John 17, 20 to 23, is that we'll remain one as he and the Father are one. So he sees the church of the 16th century. He sees the church of the 11th century. You name it. He sees the church of the 21st century. And his prayer is not, let everybody go do their own thing because we'll have more churches and that'll be good for growth. No, his church is that we should all be one as he and the Father are one. And he warns that if we're not, it's going to be a deterrent for the world believing in the gospel. When Christians are out there proclaiming contradictory creeds, that actually hurts evangelization because non-Christians see that and think, well, if you guys don't know what Christianity is all about, how could I possibly know that? And it hurts our credibility. So those would be kind of the ways I would go with that.
What do you think, Allegra?
Yeah, and what about 1 Corinthians 11:19? Would you use that? It says, no doubt there must be divisions among you so that the ones who are in the right may be clearly seen. Could you use that in, like, they knew that divisions would arise, but those that stayed firm, basically it was a test of their faith?
So I have, strangely enough, have seen Protestants appeal to that to say that division is good. Now, I don't think you could possibly read 1 Corinthians and come away with that being what you think Paul is saying. He decries the divisions in the Corinthian church literally from 1 Corinthians 1, where he laments that they've fallen into factions. You know, some follow Paul, some follow Apollos, some follow Cephas, and some say they just follow Jesus. Like, he even calls out the non-denominational Christians of 1 Corinthians. And that's still a denomination. Like, even if you just say, I follow Jesus, you're still being a denomination. And he says, don't do that. And it's true, the reason God permits this is to help highlight error. And he seems to say that very clearly in 1 Corinthians 11:19. The only reason I would hesitate in using that is because so many people misuse that verse to say that Paul is saying that this is good rather than this is why God is permitting it.
Allegra, I tell you what I'd like to do. I'm going to leave it there and send you a copy of Joe's book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. I think that will be helpful to you. If you'd like it, I'd be happy to send it. And on we go to Jeff in Atchison, Kansas.
Hey.
Is that where we got the name Atchison Topeka Railroad?
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
actually.
Okay. Listening
and
on.
It's also where Benedictine College is.
Oh, all right. Now I have a. All right, Jeff, now I've got you placed in the world. Go ahead with your question.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Very well.
All right. So I had a few questions about plenary indulgences, so I'll try to make this quick.
Jeff, any way you could, is there any chance you could talk into the phone more directly or something? You just sound like you're very muffled.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me better now?
A little better. Yeah, mm-hmm. A little better. Go ahead, give it a shot.
Okay, so I had a few questions about plenary indulgences. So, first of all, what is the exact moment that you receive the indulgence? Secondly, I was under the impression that some of the indulgences that were being offered as part of Jubilee Year this year had to be done before Christmas. Is that the case? And then also, I was also under the impression that some of the indulgences could be received through acts of mercy. And I was wondering what qualified as an act of mercy good enough to earn the indulgence.
Okay, so there's a lot there, and I don't remember all of the details of it. I do know that there is online, you can find the decree on the granting of indulgence during the Ordinary Jubilee Year 2025, and that has a much more detailed list of everything that you need for the indulgence. I know that in terms of the works of mercy, there is a specific list kind of given of examples. So it says in a special way, during the Holy Year, we are called to be tangible signs of hope for those of our brothers and sisters who experience hardships of any kind. Therefore, the indulgence is also linked to certain works of mercy and penance, which bear witness to the conversion undertaken. And then it says more especially, they should rediscover those corporal works of mercy to feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger, heal the sick, visit the imprisoned, and bury the dead. And rediscover also the spiritual works of mercy to counsel the doubtful, instruct the ignorance, admonish sinners, comfort the afflicted, forgive offenses, bear patiently those who do us ill, and pray for the living and the dead. And so it goes on to give some of the like particulars with that, but it's basically doing the things that we've always called the spiritual and corporal works of mercy. So if you're doing those things, and you can see that list there, or if you look at the judgment of the sheep and goats, Jesus describes the kind of things that he's looking for. That's what we're talking about when we talk about works of mercy.
Does that get to what you were looking for?
Yeah, kind of. But I mean, I'm a young person. I'm 15. And I was worried that, like, I don't have a lot. Like, I don't have really much money I can contribute to the poor.
I see. All right, I'll tell you what. If you could just hang on just for a minute, we'll get through this quick break, and we'll come back and discuss your particular situation at 15 years old for the Jubilee year right after this with Joe Heschmeyer. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world. But it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
From its earliest days, Catholic faith has been lived by a yearly cycle of feasts and seasons. The new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, Feasts of Our Fathers, is a one-stop companion for praying and meditating through the holy days and seasons of the Church with help from the most ancient Christian people. Don't just read about the early saints, pray with them. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers now at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Join me for Beacon of Truth today at 4 p.m. Eastern.
On the next Beacon of Truth, Dr. Scott Hahn stops by and we're talking about Soulful Psalm 60.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jeff in Kansas is on the line with Joe Heschmeyer talking about the Jubilee year indulgence and how to gain that Jubilee year plenary indulgence. There is a website, it's Jubileum 2025, but if you just type in Jubilee, this is not for Jeff, this is for anybody listening. If you want to know about the Jubilee year, if you just type in Jubilee year of 2025, it will take you, your searcher will get you to the Vatican website for this, and you can find out more about it. But I believe Jeff's follow-up question, Joe, had to do with, he's saying, I don't have a lot of money to make a charitable donation, that kind of thing. So what specifically might a 15-year-old person do to get the plenary indulgence?
Yeah. So I thought I'd give maybe a couple things that are mentioned in the document. So one of the things they talk about is making a religious procession. And there's two things you should know. So I don't know, in your case, if at 15 you live with parents who would be supportive of, you know, assisting in this or not. But one of the things that you're invited to do is, since you're obviously not going to probably plan a pilgrimage to Rome, you can also go to any minor basilica, cathedral church, co-cathedral church, Marian sanctuary, any designated collegiate church or sanctuary designated by the diocesan bishop or eparchy for the benefit of the faithful. So basically doing a miniature pilgrimage in the diocese, if that's something that is possible for you. And if it's not, and this includes also, you know, the cloistered, the elderly, the sick, and those who just basically can't get away, they're called to instead recite the Our Father, the Procession of Faith, and other prayers in conformity with the objectives of the Holy Year. I don't know what that means. And at home or wherever confined, offering up their hardships or the sufferings of their lives. So in terms of the section called Pious Visits to Sacred Places, I think that's an easy way to do, you know, like to kind of live that out, even if you're not able to travel. I know at 15, you probably aren't able to drive legally. I know the laws in Kansas have changed, but I'm pretty sure you can't just drive on your own. So, you know, if that's something where you're not able to do that. But additionally, you don't need a lot of money to do things like welcoming the stranger or, visiting the imprisoned would be difficult because of, you know, all the laws surrounding corrections stuff. But in terms of just doing what you can to help those who are in any kind of physical need, in terms of the corporal works of mercy, but also the spiritual works of mercy are ones that, as you might imagine from the name, don't take money. You know, counseling the doubtful, instructing the ignorant, admonishing sinners, comforting the afflicted, forgiving offenses, bearing patiently with those who do us ill, and praying for the living and the dead. Those are things you can do without spending any money or having any, you know, means of transportation. Additionally, we're told the faithful will be able to obtain the Jubilee Indulgence if they visit, and it says, for an appropriate amount of time, their brothers and sisters who are in need or in difficulty. The sick, prisoners, lonely elderly people, disabled people, in a sense, making a pilgrimage to Christ present in them, meaning like in the least of these. So if you have someone in your life, you know, maybe a grandparent or someone who you know is maybe homebound or alone this holiday season, that can be a really good time to just say, you know what? I'm going to go spend an afternoon visiting them. They would love it. I'm pretty sure your parents would be all in favor of that. And it's one of the ways that you can receive the indulgence with the kind of the usual conditions.
Jeff, does that help you with what you were looking for?
Yes, it does. And I was under the impression for whatever reason that it had to be done before Christmas, but it doesn't sound like that's the case.
Only starts on Christmas Eve, so it would be really hard to get it done before Christmas.
Yeah, to be clear, this is Jubilee 2025. So the Holy Doors of St. Peter's are opening Christmas Eve at 7, which is probably what you were hearing. I believe it runs from Christmas Eve of this year to Epiphany of 2026. So a year plus the 12 days of Christmas in terms of at least in Rome. I think the other Holy Doors close December 28th, 2025. But either way, on either of those, you have more than a year.
Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, okay. I thought that it was ending on Christmas Eve, I think was what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Well, fair enough. You are ahead of schedule.
Boy, you are
the first question I've gotten about that, so...
Yeah, and you made us really nervous here, Jeff, trying to figure out what was happening before Christmas. But I don't know if you have any of Joe Heschmeyer's books, but if there's one you'd like, hang on the line and tell Edgar or who's on the phones. I can't. Nathaniel's on the phones. Tell Nathaniel what you're looking for, and he'll give you one of Joe's books. I'll tell you what, it's time for now one of the most popular features of this program. Thomas the TikTok engine is here with a question from TikTok. He'll get the answer from Joe and he'll bring it back to TikTok, and then it will be hugely popular. And Joe, before I let I need Thomas's mic up. Before I let Thomas read you this, I'm going to tell you something that Thomas wouldn't tell you, but I'm going to tell you. He made a little like 45-second video. I think it's 40, maybe 60s. I don't know. of explaining Our Lady of Guadalupe, because, you know, we had the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah.
More than a million people have watched that video. More than a million people.
What a guy. So, Thomas may be the most successful evangelist for Catholic Answers. And then we trivialized him because of his silly beanie.
I may have been half of those views and my wife the other half, but a million's a million.
I mean, the two of you just kept clicking on it?
A million is a million. I'm not going to get into details.
It's a short enough video. You can just watch it 1,000 times.
And by the way, Joe, you can't make fun of my beanie right now because it's not a beanie. It's actually a seasonal head covering that
has beanie.
What I think what Chris Check would call it is just sartorial excellence.
Yes.
He loves
that. I know one of those words.
Sartorial peccadillo.
That's right. It's a sartorial peccadillo.
I know none of those words.
Peccadillo, that's one of those little animals they have in Texas that all right, yep. Go ahead with your question.
Oh yeah, okay. So Joe, I know one of your recent Shameless Popery episodes was taking on all the Christmas is pagan nonsense. So I thought that teased you up pretty well for this question that someone left in our comments. They said, Jesus was actually historically born in the summer, not the winter. So Christmas cannot be about his birth.
Yeah, this is wrong. And it's based on assuming that the weather in Jerusalem or Bethlehem is the same as the weather in northern Germany or in the U.S., which is a kind of a silly assumption. So the argument usually goes, there's no way the shepherds would have had the sheep out at night in December, because you wouldn't do that in a really cold place like northern Europe. But here's the thing. Little known fact, Israel is not in northern Europe. And so I just looked at the weather, and Christmas, the forecast is a high of 62 and a low of 45, which is not so cold you have to keep the sheep indoors. The other argument you'll hear related to this is, there's no reason the lambs would be out or the sheep would be out at night because it's not the lambing season, you know, the season in which new lambs are born. And that's again true if you're in Northern Europe or the U.S. It's not true in the Middle East. FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization for the UN, had a report by H. Epstein on Awasi sheep, which are one of the breeds of sheep that you find in Israel. And in that, it points out that the principal lambing season for the Awasi sheep is December to January. So if the reason the shepherds are out at night is because it's the lambing season, you have to be ready for the sheep to give birth at any moment, that points to December, January being the most likely time that Jesus was born.
Take that, TikTok.
Fantastic. I can't wait for TikTok to get the free lesson on sheep husbandry.
Husbandry, see, that was a good word, husbandry.
I know a few words.
All right, but hang on, don't leave yet.
Marriage has done you well. You've learned a lot about it.
I just want to take a poll of the two of you, because I'm interested in this. Do you think Jesus was born on the 25th, or do you think it's a utterly unknowable?
I think it's utterly unknowable, but I think 25th is about as good a guess of any date.
What do you think,
Thomas? Almost any date, you're going to be guessing a little bit with ancient days.
So you're you think it's like a 1 in 365 chance.
Well, I would also add to that, what does it even mean to say he was born on December 25th since we've switched calendars since then?
Oh,
have we?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, I think it's utterly unknowable.
You were going to go with December
25th? I was going to go with that. I think the early Christians have something going for them. When who were the saints? Like Hippolytus and someone else were trying to calculate it based on Jewish tradition.
Yes, I'm impressed. So, yeah, Hippolytus of Rome. But he makes an argument based on how long it's been since the beginning of the world. And he is of the opinion that the world began on March 25th because it's the spring equinox, which is actually a perfectly reasonable guess for when does the world begin? Well, springtime makes sense. First season. So, yeah. Primavera, right. As you say in Italian.
I love it. The universe began. I'm like, it's March 24th. I guess we should start the universe tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, Thomas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Back to TikTok you go. By the way, I looked it up. El Cajon has a high of 67 where we are right now on Christmas. So we'll be...
Man, you're like the Jerusalem of California.
We'll be warmer than Jerusalem on Christmas Day. All right, let's go back to the phones. Where am I going? We didn't do Audrey in Denver yet. Audrey in Denver, Colorado, listening somewhere that I don't know, but I'm glad you're here, Audrey. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Si. So I did finish your book. It was fantastic, almost as good as Joe's. But Joe is the better narrator. with all honesty.
I was so excited for, like, you should have seen how excited I got. For just a quick second, my life was good, Audrey. And then it all came crashing down.
I know we normally send books. Can we send her, like, a gift basket? That was delightful.
Man.
Well, Jill, I have all of your books, which is why I had to read Size, out of fairness. So now I have to work on Trent and Jimmy's.
Okay, so I got to start writing more books.
You called to tell me my book is almost as good as Joe's. That's...
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
No, not even close.
Your book was fantastic as well. I just... I preferred Joe's versus the narration.
You know, you kind of get me on a high, and then very quickly after that, have you spoken to my mother? Because she does the same thing. No, go ahead.
Usually you have to pay for someone to listen to you talk about these kind of problems. Yeah.
Come on, Audrey, give me your questions. Stop being mean to me and give me your question.
So the last time I called in, I told you guys that I'm working with a Protestant friend about... Mariology, essentially, and that it's not a bad thing. And so lately we've been talking about the rosary, and I was talking to her about the Hail Marys, and that the rosary itself is just meditating on Christ's life, when she blew me out of the water with a question from left field, which was that she still would never feel comfortable saying the Our Father with a Catholic because we have changed the prayer.
Did she, I think I know what she's thinking, but did she clarify what she meant by that?
No, I'm assuming that she means the fact that except on Sundays and with a pause in between for the priest to say something, we don't usually say for the kingdom, the power and the glory are yours
now
and forever.
That's what I'm assuming she's talking about there. So at the end of the Our Father, this is Matthew 6:13. Some later manuscripts have the for the kingdom, the power, and the glory line. And here's the thing. It's not in the oldest manuscripts, and it's not in the original Our Father. Where that's coming from is not originally from Scripture. It's called a doxology. It's a little prayer you pray at the end, you know, like the glory be is a doxology. So sometimes at the end of, you know, some other kind of prayer thing, you'll close everything off with a little prayer giving glory to God. And doxa is glory. And so the doxology was added by the early Christians at the end of the Our Father. And so the Didache, one of the oldest documents outside of the New Testament itself, has it. It's a great prayer. There's nothing wrong with praying for the kingdom, the power, and the glory are yours. The only thing is Jesus didn't give it. So don't call it the Lord's Prayer when it's a Christian doxology at the end of the Lord's Prayer. So the oldest manuscripts, as I say, they don't have it, like the Alexandrian manuscripts. Some later Byzantine manuscripts have it in there. But as far as I know, scholars are basically unanimous that this is clearly an insertion rather than a deletion. That nobody was, you know, oh, I hate this doxology. Let me take this out. No one's got a theological problem with it. What probably happened is some Christian who always prayed the Our Father with the kingdom, power, and the glory put that at the end, presumably thinking that it belonged there, without realizing that that part was added by the church in the first century and not given directly by Jesus. So, ironically, your Protestant friend is taking a Catholic prayer that was added to Jesus' own prayer and insisting that we have to use that prayer. And we're fine using that prayer, like we came up with it, but we don't pretend that it's coming from Jesus directly.
Does that work for you, Audrey?
That works very well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Should I send Audrey a book? I'm loath to send her a book because she's read all of
Joe's books.
I think
we should send her a book from Jimmy or from Trent. So if she's got, you know, somebody who she'd like to read that's not me because she's read all of mine and not you because she's already powered through.
I all right, fine. Let's see. How about
I'm so sorry.
Jimmy Akin, The Bible is a Catholic Book. Audrey, hang on. I got to go to the break, but we'll send you The Bible is a Catholic Book. Thank you for powering through my book, as Joe says. We'll be right back with more. Ask me anything. Oh, and we're going to find out what did the YouTube poll say? Is Zach going to come in and have a goodbye conversation with me and Joe on the air, or are we just going to ignore Zach as he fades into the sunset? Right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on, we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Should Zach come into the studio for an on-air goodbye conversation with Joe and Cy? 88% of the internet. We've pulled the entire internet. 88% of the internet. Oh, it just went down to 86 while I was talking. Are you voting? Are you people voting against him while I'm speaking? 86% of the internet wants Zach to come in. So we'll take a couple more calls. Then we'll have Zach come in and he'll tell us where he's going and what he's going to do. He came to us a mere lad, and now he leaves a married man, a father, an accomplished professional. So we'll ask him about what's next in his life right after this. Right after a couple questions. Let's do a couple questions. Martha in Rapid City, South Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Martha, I was just in Rapid City.
Hello.
Hi, Martha.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. How are you? Good.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
Joe's great. I'm medium. Because it's just the way people are treating me today. I'm kind of medium.
Okay.
You can't talk to him. You're not allowed to consult mediums.
Oh, Joe.
Okay.
Go ahead, Martha. Ask him a question.
I was wondering if he has heard of if there are going to be any holy doors opening up in the United States for the upcoming Jubilee year, like there are in Italy and in Rome.
Wonderful question.
No,
thank you.
I'm glad you asked. So I'm going to give a slightly nuanced answer. No, there are not. The only holy doors are going to be at St. Peter's, St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major, St. Paul Outside the Walls. And the notice said maybe a prison. I don't know. I don't know how that works. Like, I guess if
you just get
to
leave
the holy doors, you're also going to escape. Like, that's great. You are doubly liberated.
Is that the holy door? I just went to confession. Can I go through? All right. See ya.
Yeah. So I don't know on the prison one, but the point is, in the past, like for the 2015-2016, I'm blanking on the name of that, the Jubilee year then they had holy doors all over the world. They've gone back to just doing them in Rome. However, it's okay if you can't make it to Rome. As I mentioned to a prior caller, you can also go to your local diocese cathedral or any cathedral, any minor basilica. And so they can still designate places as kind of pilgrimage sites, but they don't have the actual holy door. So that part is different than it was before.
Okay.
No. And you know where I could find out about that? I mean, I know I could probably find out locally, but I was just curious.
Oh, about where to make a pilgrimage, where the pilgrimage sites are?
Yeah. So, I mean, on a basic level, as I said, like any minor basilica, any cathedral church, any co-cathedral church, any Marian sanctuary, any distinguished collegiate church or sanctuary designated by the diocesan bishop or eparchy, any national or international sanctuaries. So, you know, the National Basilica in D.C., I believe, would count for this. And then any cathedral in the country. If you're looking at a particular region and wanting to know, you know, is such and such a spot one of the designated places, I would look probably at that diocese website or maybe even, you know, that church's website. And the other thing I would do is just Google the name of the church if you have one in mind, followed by the word Jubilee 2025, and see if the bishop has some kind of announcement designating it as a place.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the Jubilee year, I didn't know if I'd be here for it this time around. We first heard about the Jubilee years in 2000, because we didn't know that was the first time that I was aware of that we celebrated in the Catholic Church, and now here we are again.
Martha,
yeah.
Cool.
Hold out for a few more days. You'll make it. You're gonna make it to this Jubilee year. I can feel it.
You know, I just want to quote James chapter 4, if I may.
Yeah.
Come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and get gain. Whereas you do not know about tomorrow. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. So God willing, we'll be able to experience the Jubilee year here on earth. And if he prefers, may we experience the Jubilee year in a different way. In his company.
Different holy door. That's a different holy door to pass
amen.
Through. All right, Martha, thank you very much. Let's see if we can get another call on, and then we'll have Zach come in here and say goodbye. Mike's in Dallas, Pennsylvania, listening on Jesus, Mary, and Joseph Radio. Mike, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Very, very clearly.
Yeah.
Great. Merry Christmas to you both.
Oh, thank you. To you too.
And, yes. Yeah, I have a sort of a question, and it entails a situation I saw on a television show that I followed, and it recently ended. They push they're not ashamed of demonstrating Catholicism in the show. So it's a police drama. It's called Blue Bloods. I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh yeah, my parents watch that. I've never seen
it. A lot of people have said on this our air though that that's a really good show for Catholics. So I have not watched.
Apparently they end by praying every episode or something. I don't know many of the details, but we don't have cable.
They don't shy away from it, and they try to stick to. Doctrine as much as possible, I guess. But I saw a situation in it that I had a question about, and I wasn't sure because I asked several people, and they didn't know what the answer was. It consists of a murder, an assassination occurring, and the police department arrests an individual, and they charge him. And soon after that, a priest goes to the commissioner and says, "You have the wrong man. I heard confession from the assassin today." The commissioner asks the young priest, "You must tell me the name." And the priest says, "You know, I won't do that." And so the commissioner is very upset. He goes to see the priest bishop, who is a friend of his, and says, "Go down there and tell that little priest that he must give me the name, because this is a very important case. It's a brutal murder." And the bishop says, "No, I won't do that." And so the commissioner says to the bishop, "Bob, I know you have security cameras at the parish, and I know when he hears confession at the parish. I need the tapes of those cameras." The bishop says to the commissioner, "Sure, you can have those." And it stopped me. It made me think, who was the priest's seal of confession violated by his bishop, or did the priest initially violate it by initially speaking about it?
What a great question.
That is a very good question. That is a hard one to answer. Certainly something has been done that is wrong. And let me start by giving the basic canon law here. And this is canon 983, section 1. The sacramental seal is inviolable. Therefore, it is absolutely forbidden. This is like the strongest language you'll find in canon law. It is absolutely forbidden for a confessor to betray in any way a penitent in words or in any manner and for any reason. It doesn't matter how good the reason is, giving information that will like reveal someone's sins is strictly prohibited, because we believe confession could be the difference between you going to heaven or hell. And so anything that's going to keep you from going to confession is such a serious violation of your privacy and such a serious violation of your spiritual rights that priests are very strongly prohibited from it and will be punished in the strongest possible ways for violating the seal. And so I think in this case, the priest, if he knows there are security cameras and he reveals that he's heard someone's confession, I think he's actually violated it as well as the bishop. Although the bishop isn't directly under the seal, he's still acted against it.
What a great question. Unfortunately, I like that question so much that we got to say goodbye to... I just don't want to say goodbye to Zach. I don't want to say goodbye to him. But we'll do it next hour because we didn't get to have him come in. So we'll...
He can work a full day on his last day.
You think so?
Or last week.
Okay. All right. That'll be a first, but it'll be exciting to see him work a full day. All right. Right back with more. Well, that was just unfriendly to say that. I apologize. Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer. It's Ask Me Anything. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Hey, if you're on the line already, just hang on. We're coming right back on Catholic Answers Live.